This is Yasa Sagonige,
a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the tops of the Rocky Mountains. I've got a couple of guests this evening. I will introduce them in a minute. Something we always should have done is talk about the mission of Prophecy Keepers Foundation. It's actually the mission of the White Roots of Peace Indian Council through Prophecy Keepers Foundation is to fulfill the wishes of the Hopi, Cherokee, and Iroquois White Roots of Peace Gathering elders of the 1950s and 1960s and sending their prophetic messages around the world to establish peace through the worldwide realization of our ancient common global relatedness. My guest this evening, well, this is really a kind of a special show. I need to just kind of pause and explain some things here. Since January, since meeting our two guests, all of our lives have really kind of been thrown for a loop, and we'll get to more of that later. But you know that we try to teach folks how to communicate with Creator, and we have learned through the years, through observation and my observation, other people's observation that listens to the Spirit, that when Creator's really getting ready to bless you, there are hard times sometimes. Well, it was I met Jimmy Ten Rivers back in January through our mutual friend Ben Yosef, who I had known for several years, and he brought Jimmy to my house and became instant brothers. And there were some really special things that happened at that time. But about a week later, a fellow calls me and introduces himself as Jay Lone Wolf. And he says, "Have you ever heard of me?" And I said, "No." I said, "You have me at a disadvantage." And he says, "Well," he says, "I'm accused of being an internationally famous painter." And he says, "Just Google me." And I did. And I just found out some astounding things about this man. He's of Apache heritage, and but anyway, he just said, "You know, I was raised in New York City, and I've been on the East Coast. I've been away from my people." And he said, "I'm calling you because somebody told me that that you help people like me." And he said, "I'd like to be introduced to some of my people." And I just laughed out loud. And I told him, I said, "You know," I said, I said, "I've met a few Apaches in the past, but I told him I had a very special meeting with one of your cousins just a week or two ago." And I said, I just laughed. I said, "Creator set this up." So I put Jay Lone Wolf in touch with Jimmy. And I guess from that point, why don't we just introduce you, Jimmy? It took up too much time, but I needed to lay the groundwork for this because it's really momentous to me. Say hello, Jimmy.
Hello.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing good, thank you.
And you're sitting in a house in what town?
Well, we're in Walsenburg, Colorado.
Okay, and supposedly we also have with us Grandfather Jay, and I should have introduced Jimmy as Grandfather also because he is an elder. Maybe not. He's a little bit younger than me, but he's still an elder. You know, take my word for it. Anyway, he wouldn't call himself that because, you know. Anyway, Grandfather Jay Lone Wolf, are you there?
Of course.
Okay, folks. Now I want to explain some things. I had not spoken with Jay for 7 months, and he called me a few days ago, and. Well, he left a message, you know, a month and a half ago, and he sounded very hoarse like he just did. But he called me a couple of days ago, and he says, "I can't believe it." He says, "I've got so much energy." He says, "I'm folks, if you're on the internet, just Google Jay Lone Wolf, LoneWolf, and you're going to see some of the fantastic paintings that this man does. He is monochromatic. He can only see, I guess, in black and white and shades of gray. And but the man truly is a legend in the art world. But no one knew about this. Well, he told people that he was Apache. They knew it. But he had some things that he wanted to share with his blood cousins. And because of how all the globetrotting he'd been doing, he had never had a chance to. And I guess I hear through the grapevine you've been praying for a long time that your people come and get you. And And it almost broke my heart, folks, because I knew Jay had gone through this. And then we spoke over the phone a few times over the next couple of months, and all of a sudden Jay dropped out of sight. I had no idea what happened. And I guess I didn't check his MySpace page at the – well, anyway, it was a month after he had his heart attack that I contacted his daughter. And then it's been another couple of months, and there has been a lot of prayer going on. But anyway, I've talked enough – well, I'm going to have to kind of talk for Jay tonight. He is there, folks, but he's been working so hard. Well, let me explain. Last Friday, he had a one-man exhibition. Pops out of bed after having a heart attack, and he was telling me that he has a registered nurse friend, Gray Feathers, that used the allopathic methods and the Apache methods, nursed him back to health. Shocked the heck out of me when he calls me, and his voice is almost normal. But so he has this one-man exhibition. Then he's got eight people in his studio building new canvases for him. It's like the resurrection all over again. I'm so happy that you're with us. But I guess from what Jay had told me, and translating again, I'm going to have to tell his story tonight, folks, but he's been pretty sick, and but that his spirit knows where it wants to go, but his body rebels. So, Jimmy, what do you think about what's happened with Jay? And tell us about the prayers that went on at the Sundance, and you just talk for a while, okay?
Okay. When I first was introduced to Jay, we got a chance to just speak on the telephone a couple of times, and he expressed his real want and love for his people and need to be around them, and we've been building a community here in our area over the past 12 years of weekly sweat lodges, and we've been able to bring back a lot of the puberty ceremonies from the Apache people and a lot of the songs and things like that that we're trying to teach to our community. And, we've really been praying for Jay, our whole community. And without knowing this man, and actually ever meeting him and shaking his hand, I really just from speaking to him can tell the love that he has for his people. And, hopefully someday that we're going to be able to meet each other. But this year at our Sundance, we're going into our seventh year of Sundance this year, which we were fortunate enough to meet a lot of elders that have helped us to bring this back to our community. And what we're really feeling is a lot of our ceremonies have been stolen, taken away, and we weren't allowed to practice these things during the early years of reservations and into the early 20th century. And a lot of things were taken away. So we were really fortunate to have some elders that were able to teach us the ceremony and to help us to reintroduce that to our community. And through that, Jay is one of our elders that we were able to meet. Along with reintroducing the Sundance, we also, one of our goals is to prepare a place for the elders to come during these times of, they say in the old stories that there's times of purification that are coming upon us.
And now hold that thought, Jimmy, because here's where dreams and visions come in.
Okay.
In May of 2006, I was either going to sleep or getting up, and I had a very special experience. I saw it was almost like, standing looking at the side of one of those buildings in Times Square in New York City with the moving script, and it was telling me that I was supposed to go in a certain direction and raise funds for travel expenses to bring the elders together to literally save the planet, .. More information to follow. So, you know, when I heard about your plans there at the East Gate, and folks, the Membrano Apache, well, I'm going to turn it back over to Jimmy. That's all. I just wanted to tell you about that one, that little dream I had. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Okay, so then, one of our visions here at the Eastern Gate, we're geographically, we're in the furthest portion of the Four Corners Eastern Gate. And in some of the old prophecies and stories, they speak of the elders gathering at the Eastern Gate in, during these times to possibly make decisions for the future or to help guide people to better our earth and better the things that are around us. I'm not really sure.
We've just been pointed in a direction. We haven't been shown the rest of the vision yet, you know.
And so this is kind of primarily how I met Dave, and you know, through you, Otter, and introducing us, and I think it was a lot of grandfather had a lot to put us all together, and we're all a piece of this great big puzzle, and somehow he's putting us together so we could continue doing his work like that. And, so I'm really I'm really praying for Jay a lot. I really our a lot of our ceremonies that are conducted have a lot of maybe self-affliction, you might want to say. In the sweat lodge, you kind of suffer. At the sundance, you suffer fast, and you the men pierce their bodies. And, it's really a heavy prayer. And through this prayer, a lot of healings have happened. And even just to hear Jay's voice, that is just another confirmation of what's happening here is something good.
You should have heard a couple. Not to interrupt, but you should have heard a couple of days ago. I didn't make the point that, you know, Jay calls me a voice from the dead. You know, and I expected him to sound like this. You know, with a whisper, and he calls me up, and his voice is almost as strong as it was 7 months ago before the heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, oh my gosh! And he says, you know, and he's and anyway. But
there's always strength in the red spirit. Always strength. Toke like ya e she ete aish sha ate nok ki yete le toka nakae she toke like ya e. Take life first. I once rode the plains, and now the sky dances. Call for me, always. Take life first, my red spirits.
Oh.
Well, you know, how many people knew that Jane Lone Wolf was an Apache language scholar? And, you know, so we, you know, Jimmy's got this vision out in front of him that also, and I'm sure he'll get to the ghost dance, but anyway, I have never been more excited in all the years that I've been involved in this work, because we were told certain things were going to happen. So, you know, I've studied the Native American side of things, but also studied the Hebrew side, and I think it's really interesting that this country's banks are about to be closed for a few days, you know, while they reorganize things. I'm sure that's what's going to happen. But, you know, the prophecies that we have specifically told us that this is going to happen during an election year, and other weather signs were given. So, and then that came from, you know, a Mormon direction, from a renegade Mormon bishop, and his prophecies that are 100% true have been for 100 years. So anyway, then we've got this prophecy coming from Ezekiel that points to 2008, and specifically this period of time, this month that we're in right now. Just getting ready to go into Yom Kippur, the Jewish New Year, I believe it's on the 26th. But like we've been telling folks, because of things that are going on in Israel between them and Palestinians and the United States government, and that they're trying to sell lands that were given to Joseph, who has millions and millions of descendants all around the world. What we knew, there was a 2,760-year prophecy, and that was going to come to an end right about this week. So anyway, hey, folks, if the times haven't got your attention, I don't know what will get them. But anyway, Jimmy, go ahead, and that was just a little filler. Go ahead.
Well, we've been working really hard out here, you know, and I'm really looking forward to someday meeting with Jay. And the language is, to get to that for a minute, is really important. It's something that that our people have lost here in this area. And we're really excited to have a member of our family that knows this language now. And that's going to be able to help us to reintroduce that. As I was speaking earlier about the Sundance and the other ceremonies, we really strongly feel that, you know, there's a deep need in our society today to bring these ceremonies back to their rightful place amongst the people. And there's just handfuls of folks here and there that really know these ceremonies and that are really trying hard to do that. But it's really hard in this. They say we live in the, when we follow these ceremonial ways and these old ways, that we live in two worlds. We live in that world of the second world of the material and the wants and things like that. And we go back into that first world of the sacred and when things were of the absolute like that. And it's really hard for the young people these days to live back and forth between those two worlds. And that's why they're struggling so much. So many people are having a problem with addiction and alcoholism, and there's so much things going on like that because people really doesn't understand. And that's a part of the work that we're doing here, is we're trying to open that up to all people, not just Native people, but to all people, to be able to reconnect and bring some balance back to themselves or to their lives, to their families, their homes, whatever it might be that each person might be struggling with. And we have a good community here and a lot of strong warriors that are praying hard, and we're seeing change, but it's small change, you know. And we're just looking to hopefully, like I said, reintroduce more and more each time that we can to the people, because this is what we need right now, Otter. And Jay, you know, there's so much disruption amongst our world, and rape, thievery, murder. You know, even the kids in school aren't safe. And we have to start in our own homes and our own yards to clean these things up, and a lot of folks aren't seeing that. So that's the importance of the ceremonies. That's what those are going to help with. Those bringing those back according to the old prophecies and the old ones, that it will bring balance back to our people. And the land will be returned to the Native people as caretakers. I believe these things because... if I could just talk for a minute about the ghost dance. Just for 1 minute, that was part of my vision was, and I know there's been people through the years that have tried to reintroduce this dance, but part of my vision of this is the Creator has come to me and told me about this dance, and I'm waiting for the songs to be shown to me, so we could start this. And it's going to be for all people, not just for Native people. It's for all people. The Dance of Welcome, it's called. And this is going to break a lot of those bridges and barriers that we have of prejudice and things like that we're hoping and praying for. And I know you have some thoughts on that you were thinking about.
Well, yeah, it was kind of interesting.
I'm
going to take a break, folks, and we'll be back.
Hi friends, this is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
And we're back. I was going to tell folks what I was taught about the ghost dance. And I was taught this by grandfather John Rolling Thunder Pope. He was a Paint Clan Chickamauga Cherokee. He didn't claim to be a Cherokee medicine man, but he was an intertribal medicine man and probably the most well-known medicine man of the 20th century. He was a personal friend of Bob Dylan. And the Grateful Dead. Back during the hippie days. Anyway, what he taught me was that the ghost dance, as most people knew it, they didn't understand the ghost dance because the intent and the way it was danced had been changed, and lies had been written about it in books. And Grandfather Rolling Thunder was in the Billy Jack movies. And also in the Billy Jack movies was Wovoka. And if you're familiar with the ghost dance, you know what Wovoka is. Well, Wovoka's son-in-law, Davidovich, was on the crew, and he taught the cast and crew the ghost dance, and they danced it in the movie. And we've got that clip at originalghostdance.com. But anyway, my friend Ben Yosef brings Jimmy to my house. One of the first things that comes out of Jimmy's mouth was, "What do you know about the ghost dance?" And I just put a finger up, "Wait one," and I walked over and popped a DVD in the machine. I said, "This is what you're looking for." And so that's it. So we just did it. It was just like wham, you know. And then we met Jay, and then and then 7 months of I don't know what's been telling us to slow down, but you know, I found in the past that when you're doing what Creator wants you to do, there's going to be opposition, and boy, has there been. So let me go ahead and tell the folks what you know, Jimmy.
Well, it's the ghost town started with Jack Wilson back in the 1890s, and his native name was Wovoka. He was a Paiute man, and he was given vision after supposedly being dead for 5 days, and they were going to open him up on the fifth day to see if he bled, and he came out of his coma or whatever it was that he was in, and he said he actually spoke to God, and this is the instructions that he was given for this dance. Well, like you said earlier, it was taken out of text and it was changed, and people became fearful of it because it seemed to bring some kind of strength back to the native people also too, and some kind of feeling of belonging and things that at a really terrible time in our history for the native people that they needed to have some kind of strength brought back to them like that. And that's also how the Sundance this came about too. But through this vision of Jack Wilson, you know, everything kind of got jumbled around and changed, and a bunch of people who ended up getting killed at Wounded Knee, and it just turned real tragic. So the people could not practice this dance anymore openly. We couldn't practice our sun dances. We couldn't do our sweat lodges. And if it wasn't for a few very brave elders and people that took these things underground and kept them hidden away, the dance consists of it's a four-day dance, the sun dance. The ghost dance is also a four-day dance. But people hid. They hid to do these dances. They wouldn't pierce anymore during the Sundance time. Fear of showing the marks on their body, they would be persecuted, sent to prison, whipped, punished, things like that. Well, they practiced these things underground. Well, about 5-6 years ago, you know, I just started having these dreams and things about this dance, you know, and books were put into my hands, and things just happened to correlate together like that. It was some kind of vision that I was having about this, and to bring it back for the people, for all people, not just for Native people, but for all people, like I said earlier, break these bridges and these barriers of this prejudice that's been. They say there's no prejudice still in our country or around the world, but there is, and there's a lot of it.
There sure is.
And it's one of the biggest things that we've had problems with our people. You know, they have to get identification cards to say who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible things are still you know, a lot of people in this country think that the Native Americans really have it made because of the casinos that some of them were given and things like that. And some of them do. But the majority of the Native people are still living third world, and they're still living really rough. The South Dakota Pine Ridge Reservation is number one place in America for suicide, young people committing suicide.
Yeah, I hate to chime in here, but if Grandfather Jaime Perez were sitting in this circle, he would want to chime up and say, well, you know, this fellow is a Mixtec and Medicine man, and he's done translation work for Grandfather Hunbutt's man, and he's also run for mayor in El Paso, and he's got a master's degree in public administration. So, you know, he was telling me about the situation with the casino down in El Paso, and he said, you know, he says they made a tremendous amount of money. And he says, instead of putting it into some kind of industry, something to make the tribe self-sufficient, he says, they bought the huge houses and the Mercedes-Benzes. And he says, now the casino's shut down, or not making enough money, and they can't even afford to put their gasoline in their, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he says, and if all the casinos in this country would give 5% of their annual income to Indians south of the border, he says, we just got to learn to share it. Number one, we got to be smart about money.
Yes.
You know, and that's where guys like Grandfather Jay Lone Wolf come in. I mean, the man's been blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm sure he's got enough lawyers to be smart about money, you know. So we got to learn to handle money. We got to learn to put a nation together. Like right now, the Republic of Lakota, you don't hear a lot, but there's going to be some interesting things coming out, because you got people like Norbert Johnson, who literally wrote the book on economic development for Indian tribes, and I'm talking about a 1,000-page, $300 kind of book that all the tribes buy, he's that much of an equity. Anyway, he's out there working in that direction. I got off on a tangent. You'll have to excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, one thing is that people have to learn is how to take care of their money, take care of things like that.
Jimmy, Jay was saying something. What did you say, Jay?
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's not too far from the mark. I go to the Miccosukee Reservation.
Yeah.
I see three Hummers in a driveway, and those are just cars to go to the store with. You know, I look at some of our people, and they have a grand of wealth, but they forget, like everything else, like the wind sometimes when you're sailing. It doesn't always last, and then you're left to drift. People have to remember that the wind and the waves are always on the side of the ablest navigator. We have to learn to share in order to grow. We have to learn to conserve in order to preserve. We have to maintain the word in order to keep the red spirit strong. I cannot believe sometimes when I go to the reservation where the average income there is six figures, and I see people spending money like there's no tomorrow. You know what? These things are made of stone. A good hurricane can bring that down. Some of us forget this. We have to share with one another in order to grow. There is no growth without sharing. If I have the seeds for corn and you do not, you will starve. We have to share. This is a funny climate we live in. You know, I used to be able to step outside and take a deep breath and feel freedom. Now when I step outside and I take a deep breath, I smell debt. I suspect Wall Street has something to do with that. I'll be paying for somebody's debt who I don't know. Then I watch a debate. I see a pretty smile, pretty teeth, pretty hair, tight dress and a thong, but no message. My father always told me, let your speech be better than silence, or remain silent, but listen to the people. The people speak. The people's hearts scream. Their souls yell. Their spirits thunder. Yet they do not listen to the people. We have somebody come over from Alaska, wants to run for vice president, has never took the time to listen to the Eskimos. Now, ironically, I found out she just wants to use a few hundred acres to drill in of millions of acres. But ironically, those acres are right on or about native ground.
Yeah,
so what do we do? We move them out? Listen to the people. Listen to the spirit of our people. It's so important. I apologize for ranting. My spirit gets on fire sometimes.
I'm glad, you know. You know, the folks out there, if you've never really been around a traditional elder, you've really missed things. It's really special to just sit and listen to someone who is steeped in a culture. Rolling Thunder was very, very special to me because he was steeped not only in our own Cherokee culture, and knew enough about Cherokees to know one when he saw me coming. And said so. And but the you know, people have no most people have no conception of the depth of commitment that people like Jane Lone Wolf and Jimmy Ten Rivers and Ben Yosef have to and the commitment that they have to teach people about different cultures. And I've been doing this for a lot of years, and, you know, I was looking into my astrology. I mean, it's in my astrology, folks. It's what I do. It's like Robert Goswell, before he passed away, he said, you know, sometimes, you know, he and I would cry, and of course, on, you know, you know, we were brave, you know, on the outside, you know, we were confident, but talking between each other sometimes, you know, I call him and I cry, or vice versa, and but he'd say, you know what, we're going to get up in the morning, we're going to do it again, because it's what we do. But anyway, I've preached enough. Jimmy, go ahead. Take it away.
It's funny you say that. You know, one thing we say in our sweat lodge, we always talk about, like, in the morning, the birds wake up, and they'll be singing their songs, and they don't really know what's going to be happening to them that day. They could get hit by a car or catch a BB gun or something could happen, but they still sing their songs every day, every morning. You get up, you hear those birds out there. And the same thing is true with our people. You know, the songs are very important, the language very important. So it's important that they learn those songs and they learn those things in order to make a better place for us. And so we get up anyway. We don't know sometimes how we're going to pay our bills or if grandma's going to make it through the day, or, you know, or what's going to happen. We have a lot of struggles. I'm disabled myself. I've been hurt since 1984. I broke my neck in a car accident. And, you know, and we don't know from day to day, but we still wake up singing our songs. We still wake up praying to Creator, to Houston, and you know, it's really powerful like that, because it's almost like a blind faith, you know. But that's okay too, because we know the instructions that Creator gave to our people, and when you understand those things, when you go to ceremony or you're around a good community like the community we have here, and you start to understand those kind of things, and you're able to see and recognize things that other folks out there that are running 9-to-5 jobs and don't have time even to sit down with their families, you know, you start recognizing things that folks like that can't really see. So sometimes, you know, this the folks got to kind of slow down, just kind of look around, and for people, you know, for all people, it's we need to keep singing those songs. We need to remember these old ways, these old teachings, and start bringing them back a little bit more, reintroducing them to our families and to whoever we can, because this is the instructions that I've received, that where the changes are going to come about. And so I really believe that. You know, one thing we say for all our ceremonies, and I would like maybe Jay to teach us how to say this in the Apache language, in the Ende language, because we've adopted a lot of things from the northern people in this area, like the sun dances, the Lakota ceremony, and the way of the Chanupa, the pipe, is a northern.
Well, let's take a break, 2 minute break, and hey Don, wake up in the studio and put our break music on, and then we'll come back and. And folks, if you need a cup of coffee, squeeze a kidney or whatever, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
Okay, folks, we're back from break, and Jimmy was just telling me what to remind him of, so since we came back on the air, I'll let him tell everybody, what to remind him of. Well, you been smoking, man?
Yeah. Well, I was just talking earlier about our ceremonies, and I was asking Jay, you know, if he could just, in the Ende language, if he could, we adopted the saying that they say in the North, you know, whenever we speak, or we're going to speak in ceremony, or when we're done speaking, or when we're entering or coming out, we always say to all my relations. And I was just wondering if Jay could iterate on that and give us the Ende, how we would say that in Ende, to all my relations.
I'm sorry, I could not hear.
The words to all my relations in the Ende language.
Would you like me to say something to our people?
Yes.
Yeah, he just I guess he wanted to go through how different things are said, and particularly all my relations.
Oh, Nikki, Meshi, Nahaha, No Oote, Ishi, Nihi, She, Ane, Leche, Ne, Yeti, She, Ahi, Ane. I live in a land where thousands of people come and still do not speak my tongue, yet claim they're my benefactors. Sorry to be political this moment.
Yeah.
Well, this is just one thing that we try to point out, you know, to a lot of people, is that we're all related. You know, if it's the animals, the plants, the water, the air, we're all related to all these things. And we all have to start recognizing it as that, because you wouldn't, maybe in this day and age some people would, but they wouldn't hit their mother. They wouldn't pollute her like that, the way they're doing to our earth and all these things that are going on. You know, so that's the importance of that to all my relations, is that people understand that we're all related. You know, and we're all related to this earth and all things on her. And it was one of our original instructions as people to take care of things.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And we're not doing it, you know. And so people really need to listen to that. When you speak, say to all my relations, and you could understand, if these are your relatives, then why do you hurt them? Why do you hurt the waters? Why do you hurt the airs?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mother Earth allows us to live on her flesh, yet we tear it, yet we destroy it, yet we pollute it. Are we bees or ticks on Mother Earth? If we are ticks, then we need to be disinfected. If we are beings, then we need to be like trees, plant roots, grow, flourish the red spirit, and teach others, educate others to do the same. We should be Mother Earth's embrace, not Mother Earth's disease. It is important that we learn, and as elders, teach the youngers to do that and understand and respect it. Don't ride a dune buggy 100 miles through a desert and destroy the desert. The desert is there for a reason. It is where eventually we will probably meet the Creator in a desert. Let's keep it pristine. Let's learn to conserve. Let's learn to preserve. Let's learn to teach the young warriors to respect what we have respected and our 10 fathers before us have respected. Yet we move on and they linger. It is important that the message move forward, that Mother Earth embraces us. She comforts us. She feeds us. She keeps us there on this mystical rug so that the day when the Creator sends the great white horse, we can get blessed and go home. She keeps us. She babysits us for Creator. Yet, we turn against the babysitter. We throw stones against the babysitter. We defile the babysitter. We need to remember we reside with the babysitter because Creator left us in her care. When he comes back, Creator will pass judgment for those of us who did not take care of the babysitter. It is so important that we convey that message, because we have no other message in the world. We must convey the message of humility, the message of learning how to educate one another so we can move forward as a people. There is no one I dislike in this planet. There is no one I have that much disdain or hate for. I may not agree with half the people in the planet, but by golly, there is no way I shall defile Mother Earth, who embraced me from birth, who fed me from birth, who bathed me from birth, who's kept me moving on a direction to my people, and now with Creator's help, I'm almost there. We must remember that Niki Boho Hahate Le'ahunok. Honor Mother Earth, and she will feed us.
Now, oh,
right, wake
oh.
You, Blue Otter.
Oh. Jay?
Yes.
I sure am glad you're still with us.
I know. People call it Mother Earth. I call it my babysitter.
Yeah.
Because I don't know any other structure or I like to say spirit being, this great sphere we reside, this spirit being that gives so much life and life flourishes so much, and yet not all the time, but sometimes we need to turn away and we must turn right back, apologize, and fix what we have broken.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy, do you have anything to add? We've got just a couple more minutes before we'll go to the closing.
There was just one more thing that I would like to talk about, and I guess that would be the return of Geronimo Skull. You know, back in the days of Prescott Bush, it was understood that through a woman that had dated many of the Bonesmen, that she found this information to be true, that the skull of Geronimo was taken along with Mangus and some of the other warriors, some of their bones were taken, and through that this Skull and Bone Society was formed, and that there's been a lot of unclean rituals that have been performed with these skulls and with these bones, and our people have been crying for a long time for the return of these items, sacred items, and that's along with all the sacred items that have been stolen through the years. I've been into museums and I've seen the dresses of women and the papooses of little kids, and they have these things in museums on displays, and these are sacred items to our people, even the sacred pipes and the drums and all these things. They need to be returned. According to my friend Ben Yosef, there's been a terrible curse placed upon the Bush family because of this. And I kind of have no reason to doubt that.
The Sanhedrin, you know, when he was in Jerusalem, they delivered a scroll to him telling him that, you know, if he would stop pushing for certain things, that he wouldn't be qualifying to be Gog and Magog. But if he continued doing what he was doing, in their estimation, that's what he was going to be. We live in the end times, folks. But, and you know what? You know, the more and more evil that gets shown, you're going to see some spectacular things coming from Creator. And we've got about 30 seconds. Grandfather Jay, you want to say goodbye to the folks?
Oh, yes, and I'd like to give a shout-out to 4MC.
Take your time. We're going right up to the top of the hour, with or without break music.
Okay, I'd just like to give a shout-out to 4 motorcycle groups that have always supported me. One group is called Jerusalem Freedom MC. The other one's called Native American MC. The other group is called Bikers for Christ MC. And the Last Disciples MC. I'd like to give them all a thank and praise them for all their work with the poor and helping those that are in tremendous need. And I'd like to remind everybody that Mother Earth is not just Mother Earth. She's our babysitter. She is the benefactor who will be handing us the Creator. Let's please respect this great carpet we walk on. Thank you.
Well, Don, go ahead and play the closing music. And, folks, this has been another episode of Prophecy Keepers Radio. We will see you next week. And, want to recommend everybody take a look at intelwater.com, intelwater.com. We're going to be talking more about the Genie water wands and how good they are for you, because they create a special kind of water right in your bottle. But I did promise to say something about that tonight, but got sidetracked. Donald, go ahead and play our closing music. And folks, thanks for listening.
Below, let the truth be known. Prophecy keepers.
are listening to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine men of the Americas, the holy people of Africa, or the present-day Ottawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times. From the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Levant, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
You are listening to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine men of the Americas, the holy people of Africa, or the present-day Ottawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times. From the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Levant, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tohiju Tohigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation. Pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
You are listening to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, or the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine men of the Americas, the holy people of Africa, or the present-day Ottawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times. From the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Levant, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tohiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniutikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old friend Bluewater coming to you from the tops of the Rocky Mountains. And before we introduce this evening's guest, I'd like to recognize Bunny Sings Wolf, who sang that song you just heard, and Karen Lake, the author. Actually, they authored it together, and Bunny sang it. I would also put in a prayer request for our friend, Jay Lone Wolf Morales. Needs your prayers. Tonight's guest on Prophecy Keepers is Magin Ben Yosef. He's an American-born, Orthodox Jewish educated, but did not convert to Judaism. He has been a leading spokesman for the House of Joseph movement and wants to explain to everybody tonight we'll go to about 15 more minutes, and then we'll take callers. But he would like to explain to everybody tonight how the foreign policy of the United States and Israel may, according to prophecy, end in disaster for both countries or any other country that's involved. How are you this evening, Ben Yosef?
Aho, Blue Otter. Great to hear from you.
Oh, good to hear from you, too. First of all, why don't you explain to the folks what a Magid is?
Okay. I was given a choice of any smicha, that's like an ordination that I wanted, except rabbi, since I'm not Jewish, and they didn't want to set a precedent in Israel of having a non-Jewish rabbi. So I was given a choice in several things, and I chose Magid because a Magid is a storyteller, and that is in keeping with my Native American side.
So how did you get this gig? I mean, what, long story made short, how did you end up doing, you know, 2 7-year stints in Israel? And tell a little bit, the folks a little bit about the politics and everything you went through to try to get the House of Joseph recognized. Go ahead.
Well, Broder, I was a daily newspaper editor. That was my former career of about 20 years. And I had a very strange experience with a light which shone on my face. And it was a very bright light, and it scared the bejesus out of me and a number of people in my in the newspaper office. Anyway, to make a long story short, I wound up leaving the newspaper business, went to a Christian seminary where I learned Hebrew, and then from that point moved to Israel, rejoined the media to support myself as a missionary in an all-Muslim West Bank village called Bet Faji. And I lived there among the Palestinians for some time, and then eventually moved into Jerusalem proper and studied with rabbis while I was working at the Jerusalem Post as a religion writer and editor, and wrote a column. And I got involved in the politics of Israel through this column, which was opposed to a Palestinian state in Judea Samaria. Let me qualify that we're not opposed to a Palestinian state in another part of the land of Israel, but Judea Samaria is not the place that it should be, because Judea Samaria is set aside according to biblical prophecy as an area to reconcile the children of Joseph and the children of Judah. These comprised separate kingdoms. They were exiled 136 years apart, and they never reconciled after a civil war and the northern kingdom aligning with the enemies of the southern kingdom. So I got involved in the politics there. My last stay in Israel was in 2000 and 2001. And because I was opposed to this Palestinian state, I was arrested on 3 occasions and imprisoned without any charges ever being filed against me. I eventually was released and was told that I had to take a voluntary vacation from the state of Israel. And that's where I'm at, where I am now, in exile, here, living here in the southwest Colorado Rockies, and have aligned myself with the descendants of Geronimo's Apaches. And that's quite a story to tell. But I'll let you take the lead on.
Well, why don't you, well, first of all, to bring to everybody to remembrance, you know, if you ever went to Sunday school, or if you saw the movie Joseph, you might remember 12 brothers, all descendants of Jacob, who was renamed Israel. And Joseph was the one that was very gifted, and perhaps the most gifted of all of the brothers, and they became jealous. And if the coat of many colors story, this is the guy, folks. And now this man became second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. And now I guess according to the prophecy, these descendants that walked away from the land of Israel about 2,730 years ago, they have a promise that they can once again take possession of their inheritances, which are up in the mountains of Judea and Samaria, but it's on the wrong side of the green line, and
And I never really did understand why they wanted a non-contiguous Palestinian state when, I mean, the Palestinians have already got Gaza. I mean, that's no problem, and they could extend the homeland up the coast. And but, I mean, why do the Palestinians even want that land over in the mountains? I don't, well, water, probably. But anyway, but there's a very, very dire prophecy in Obadiah. Why don't you tell the folks about that what the Bible says will happen if these Palestinians are in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay. Well, let me say, first of all, that the children of Joseph do not inherit all of Judea Samaria, only the northern two-thirds of Judea Samaria, which is the land called the Shomron, or Samaria. And it was named Samaria because whenever the northern tribes were vacated from this region, Samaritans were brought in by the Assyrian conquerors. And so the name Judea Samaria refers to the fate of Judah and the fate of Joseph, because it is Joseph's land. But Blue Otter, not only is it Joseph's land, it is also the birthright of Jacob. And, you know, the thing that we need to emphasize as far as the fate of the Palestinians who live in the territories of Joseph is that the prophet Obadiah referred to these people as the house of Esau because perhaps of their Palestinian ultra-nationalism, their perpetual hatred of the children of Jacob. For whatever reason, the little book of Obadiah, the smallest book in the Bible, tells the story of the fate of the house of Esau who remain in the territories of Joseph. And unfortunately, our roadmap to peace in the Middle East, proposed by the Bush administration, proposes to give the birthright of Jacob to the house of Esau. You can't ask for a worse curse.
Okay, now, just to remind folks, these are the two, you remember there was Jacob, there was Esau, and Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. So, I never really did understand why they were trying to force a non-contiguous Palestinian state unless they really wanted to see all these people killed and to fulfill the prophecy negatively. What do you think about that?
Well, the problem we run into is the fact that whenever Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau, was pregnant with these twins, there was a battle going on inside of her womb. That's exactly how it's described in the biblical account. And she went to a prophet, and the prophet told her, in your belly are two nations. And he used the word two le'um. A le'um is a people who unite around the same ideology. But these are two different le'um, which were in the womb of Rebecca. And so this means that from birth, the children of Jacob and the children of Esau were to be kept apart. And unfortunately, our politicians in Washington do not understand this idea of separate le'umim. And therefore, they are proposing this non-contiguous state that would comprise Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza. Whereas the biblical Palestinian state, which, by the way, Blue Otter, if people are interested in looking at this in more detail, on my website, at www.torah-voice.org is the biblical Palestinian state, which I call the Zechariah Plan, because the prophet Zechariah alluded to this in chapter 9. And the biblical Palestinian state comprises the existing region of the Gaza, extended to Ashkelon, Ashdod, and ancient Ekron, and the very, very fertile Shephelah Valley, which would make it a contiguous state and would give the Palestinian people an area that is much, much more fertile than the land in which they're living now. As a matter of fact, the borders of Israel today are called the Green Line, because beyond that Green Line in Judea Samaria, the Palestinians have not been able to get very much to grow. And so the fertile Shephelah Valley, together with the Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Ekron, would give them enough territory and a very good livelihood. And of course, some arrangement would have to be worked out where they could still share Jerusalem. But, you know, these are things that have to be worked out. Unfortunately, our State Department is not even thinking along these lines. And they're not realizing the curse that they're bringing on this nation. And we can see the evidence of it already. It's all around us with the mortgages and the grocery prices, the gasoline prices, the weather. It's obvious that the Creator is not very pleased about something.
Yeah, and I want to remind folks, because of his Orthodox Shemitah, Ben Yosef is qualified and allowed to teach Torah to non-Jews. So if you have a soft spot in your heart for Israel, maybe not necessarily the Zionist government that's running it into the ground, but the real Israel, and please, Ben Yosef needs your support. Go to torah-voice.org, make a donation. Ben Yosef's living by faith, folks. He's doing this without purse or script. It is a little scary, and I'm not far behind him, but he needs your support, folks. I also want to add that Ben Yosef is a scholar, and he had the support. Well, why don't you tell the folks about the support from prominent Orthodox rabbis there and what their stature was in Israel.
Okay. Well, let me say, first of all, that I've had very little contact from Israel since I've been in exile. But I do have a number of people that I stay in touch with via email. They keep me up to date on what's going on. But my smicha came from the Ribi Shani Dor, the Breslav Hasid Rav Yisrael Z. Yehuda Schneider, who was chosen to be one of the members of the revived Sanhedrin court in Jerusalem. He was a good friend of mine. We've known each other now for 17 years, and he was my mentor when I was in Israel. And whenever he was named, well, just before he was named to the Sanhedrin court, actually, he's the one who arranged with some other rabbis there that I should have some kind of authority to do what I'm doing, and so they gave me the smicha to which you refer.
So, now you had a lot of adventures over there. We don't have time to go into a lot of it. We're going to be going to a break here. I got about a couple more minutes. Why don't you tell the folks in the couple of minutes that we've got about the timeline and why this year is so important?
Okay, the year 2008 figures in the prophecy of the return of the house of Joseph specifically, because whenever the prophet Ezekiel was told to issue a decree of exile against both the house of Judah and the house of Israel, the southern tribes and the northern tribes, Ezekiel lay on his side for 390 days for a judgment against the northern tribes. And God decreed that every day that he lay on his side would be 1 year of judgment against the northern tribes. Well, the northern tribes never repented from their sins, their transgressions. And so that judgment, according to the Torah, was multiplied sevenfold to 2,730 years. And if that 2,730 years is reckoned to begin at the time of the exile in 722 before the Common Era, you do the math, subtract 722 from 2,730, and you come up with the year 2008. So 2008 is the year that the decree of judgment against the northern tribes of Israel ends. Now, what happens after that is the question, whether the children of Joseph should now focus on reuniting among themselves, which is what I think is supposed to happen. There's two branches of the family of Joseph. There's Manasseh and there's Ephraim. And Manasseh, as hopefully we'll get into a little later, figures very prominently in the prophecies of the Native Americans and especially the Hopi migration.
Well, we've got about 10 seconds for the first break. Folks, Prophecy Keepers, we're about a lot of things, but we're about helping you prepare. So take a listen to this break.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Well, we're back, and if that break didn't shock you a little bit, I would be surprised. anyway, to continue what we were talking about before the break, you mentioned Hopi prophecy during the break. Well, maybe now's a good time to introduce this to folks and how Hopi prophecy ties in with the House of Joseph.
Okay, well, we really have two written documents that ties the Hopi prophecies to the House of Joseph. Now, as a Magus, one of my duties is that of Mokia, which means I'm like an exegete. And an exegete should focus his attention on written evidence more than anything else. And so the two documents that I've been examining, one of them is the Book of Hopi, which was written in 1976 by Dr. Frank Waters. After Waters had lived among the Hopi and was given permission to write about their ceremonies. And he discovered that the Hopi had a tradition that seven of their cities or clans buried their weapons of war and declared a vow of peace. And this is how they became known as Hopi, because the name Hopi, according to a medicine man, Emory Holmes, at Hotavia, up on the third mesa, according to him, the name Hopi means peace. So it seems evident that they were called something else before they were called Hopi. Now, here we turn to the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon correlates with these Hopi prophecies. It was published 146 years before the Hopi traditions were even made public. And in the book known as Alma, Chapter 23, verses 7 through 13, we find that the Lamanites are described as occupying seven cities in approximately the same region as the Hopi, here in the southwest of America. And these seven cities also declared a vow of peace and laid down their weapons of war. It seems that this is just too much of a coincidence for it not to be tied somehow to the Hopi prophecies. The Mormon records that these Lamanites were no longer called Lamanites after this happened. Rather, they were called Anti-Nephi-Lehi. Now, Anti-Nephi-Lehi, to me, is not a name that's going to catch on. And so it seems logical that at some point this name would be changed to reflect the peaceable nature of these people, the Hopi. We also have a prophecy in the Book of Mormon, which I believe ties very directly to the Hopi migration. Laman, who was the eldest son of his father, Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef. Now, Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef was a prophet from Jerusalem. He was descended from Joseph, however. But he and his family remained in Jerusalem after the exile of the northern tribes. Therefore, they remained in covenant with the Creator. They possibly were part of the family of Judah at that time because they were living in Jerusalem, yet they're descended from Joseph. Anyway, Laman had been a big disappointment to his father. And Lehi had to flee with his family from Jerusalem after prophesying the destruction of the Jerusalem temple 14 years before it occurred. And they fled to the south, and they came to a riverbed that adjoined with the Red Sea. And Lehi observed the rising and falling of the tide of the Red Sea and how it would fill and empty this riverbed. And so he turned and he pointed to his son, Laman, the one he'd been disappointed with. And he said, that you might be like unto this river, continually returning to the fountain of all righteousness. And that's in 1 Nephi chapter 2 and verse 9 in the Book of Mormon. Now the Hopi were told by their ruling spirit, whose name was Mossaw, essentially the same thing that Abraham was told. They're told to walk the length and the breadth of the land in all four directions and stake it out everywhere they migrate, so that in the future, the entire land that had been staked out would belong to the descendants of the Hopi. They were told to make these migrations to the glaciers as far south as they could travel and to the eastern and western oceans, but each time they were to return to the area from which they had left. Now, this sounds a lot like the prophecy that was spoken to Laman. And the sacred area, known today as the Four Corners of southwest Colorado, southeast Utah, northwest New Mexico, and northeast Arizona, in ancient times was known by another name. According to the medicine man Emory Holmes, again, at Hota Villa, on Third Mesa, the Aztec were one of the clans of the Hopi who arrived rather late into Central and South America. And he says that the Aztec are the ones who coined the name Aztlan, which means homeland. While they didn't return, they were supposed to, they told their children to be mindful someday of their homeland, Aztlan, in the north. And here at the eastern gate, the eastern region of this Four Corners area, we've started an organization called Iglesia de Aztlan, the Assembling of Aztlan. Actually, it was chartered back in 1992, long before this name could have been associated with anything to do with the elements who are coming up from the south and are causing problems with committing crimes. There is a dimension to this name, Aztlan, which has perverted it. But here at the eastern proximity of this area, we're attempting to set up and prepare for Native American elders to come here at the eastern gate of this region. Traditionally, that's where elders came. We don't know what they're going to what they'll do when they get here, but we anticipate that it has something to do with preparing for the aftermath of the Hopi purification.
Exactly. And would you like to take calls now from people that feel a kindred spirit?
I'd be delighted, Blue Otter.
Well, the call-in number is toll-free 877-876. 5227 in the USA only, and USA and Canada, you can call 888-815-9756. So it's 877-876-5227 in the USA, or USA Canada line 888-815-9756, and we'll invite anybody that would like to call in and discuss this. And understand now when when you're working with, I heard you did another interview over on another BBS station, and of course everybody knows about President Bush. Are they aware that
A whole bunch of Orthodox rabbis declared him to be Gog Magog.
Well, this is one of the things that we do have on our website. It is an exegesis of the passages in Ezekiel that pertain to the infamous leader known as Gog Magog, whose objective is to steal Israel's oil. Now, what I find interesting about it is if anyone will look on my website at www.torah-voice.org, there's a logo there in the right-hand corner, which is a picture of an outline of Judea Samaria that is an outline of a man wearing a crown. And the prophecies about Joseph were that the blessings of the deep, which today we would refer to as oil, but the blessings of the deep would be on the crown of the head of Joseph. And if you look at that logo, the crown, right at the top of the crown, is a little village called Megiddo, which is, of course, the site of the future Battle of Armageddon. And it appears that what is going on in the territories of Joseph is that the Saudis, who influenced the Bush administration to propose this suicidal plan for Israel, are attempting to steal the oil of Israel with the help of George W. Bush, who the Jerusalem Sanhedrin court recently gave a scroll declaring him to be the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And if you read in Ezekiel chapter 38 and chapter 39, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal is this infamous Gog. There are some interesting things about that name, Gog. First of all, in Hebrew, the name George would be spelled exactly like Gog, because in Hebrew, the tendency of the resh, the R sound, to assimilate is quite common, especially with the name George, because George is a name that is difficult for a native Hebrew speaker to pronounce. Rather, George is called Joj, J-O-J, Joj. And if you transliterate J-O-J into Hebrew, since there is no J sound in Hebrew, you have to use the G. And therefore, George W. Bush is Gog W. Bush. And whenever you take the gematria, now gematria is a means of assigning a numerical value to every letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The first 10 letters have the value of 1 through 10. The next 10 letters have the value of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and so on up to 100. And the last three letters, 200, 300, and 400. If you take the gematria of the name Joj Walker Bush, it is 666.
Well, isn't that interesting? And this is the guy that's, you know, sitting with a finger on the button in Washington, D.C., and it makes me wonder what is going to happen next, you know, if the House of Representatives and the Senate and the legislators of the United States, they can't figure out how to save the economy. There are executive orders that have been in force for quite a while that would enable President Bush to declare different levels of martial law, like the martial law that worse than we've got, because basically, you know, we're not under any kind of constitutional law. And yes, folks, I am a Ron Paul supporter. I support the great law of peace of the Haudenosaunee, and they got the United States, according to Ben Franklin, modeled their law after the great law of peace. And there is only one person in Washington, D.C. that's for the Constitution, that's Ron Paul. And, you know, here's a guy, folks, that, I mean, his name wasn't allowed to be mentioned at the Republican convention. Any delegate that showed up with pro-Ron Paul materials had them taken, confiscated, literally. If anybody tried to take the stand and mention his name, their microphone was shut off.
So there's your guy, folks. You know, if you think either the other two candidates are going to change anything. And Ben Yosef, you understand you had a spiritual experience here recently on this subject. You want to tell folks about it? About not being fooled?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I was listening, I was staying up late writing, and I was listening to a broadcast of Coast to Coast AM, and George Norrie, who narrates that, does musical interludes between the news and... Anyway, the musical interlude was from The Who, the song Don't Get Fooled Again. And there's a line in that song that goes something like, we better get on our knees and pray, and then there's a pause, we don't get fooled again. Well, I had been praying specifically about the Palin, the vice president, and... that was what was in my spirit, was to pray that we didn't get fooled again. And then a couple of days later, I went to the Purification Lodge here, the Apache Purification Lodge, and I think it was during the spirit round, the second round of the lodge, that Ten Rivers prayed the exact same words about the presidential election. Grandfather, help us not to be fooled again. And then... I got a third sounding with the same words. And so I felt like it was very important that before any Native American decides in this election, that we should determine exactly where these candidates stand on a few key issues. And from my perspective, they relate to spiritual issues, because I personally believe that, and let me ask, does anybody else on the face of Turtle Island think that we're under a curse? Because I think the evidence points that we are. And so, anyway, I believe before we would support Palin or Obama or any of the candidates, that we should know exactly what their position is on this suicidal roadmap to peace in the Middle East and a Palestinian state somewhere other than Judea Samaria.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from WiseFoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from WiseFoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingraham, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit WiseFoods.org today and see why.
Well, folks, we're back from the break and putting a good scare into you. You know, we're not trying to scare people. We're trying to convince them it's time to do something. And, of course, at Prophecy Keepers, we teach, you know, how to get in touch with the Creator. And but this is what we do full-time, folks. Neither Ben Yosef and I have any other means of support. And in order for this show to continue weekly, and we would like to get on more often. There's a lot of things that we could do. And but anyway, be sure and offer Ben Yosef your support. Well, before we went on break, you know, you were talking about the political situation and how it's important not to be fooled. I understand there were some and the rumor mill said that there's some interesting things going on in our military, and I heard one rumor that a DEFCON 1 order was given, which would, under certain circumstances, would release our military commanders to engage anyone that might be engaging our fleets. So what do you think, you know, going on in the Straits of Hormuz and with Israel? You know, a lot of people are kind of concerned right now. And what do you think about the military situation, Ben Yosef?
Well, this is really not an area of my expertise, but I would say one thing, that when a nation is under earth, it could extend to all aspects of American experience, including the military. I personally believe our involvement in Iraq is related to this same curse, because in during the administration of George, or I should say H.W. Bush, because George H.W. Bush also has an association with the name GOG, which we may talk about in a few weeks. We're trying to line up some more information about the actual source of this curse that has come upon the United States. But there's a scripture, Genesis chapter 12 and verse 3, which spells out a spiritual principle. It's God speaking to Abraham, and he says to him, Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, but those who curse you, a curse will come upon them. They will cause themselves to be cursed, in other words. So when George H.W. Bush convinced the our allies and the Arab nations not to align with Saddam Hussein in the 1991 Persian Gulf War, immediately after the ceasefire of that war, within a few days, Secretary of State James Baker came to Jerusalem with a suitcase. And in that suitcase, he had several demands. And one of these demands was that Israel must no longer build settlements in Judea, Samaria. And the settlements that were there should be dismantled. Apparently, this was a deal that had been struck between the George H.W. Bush administration, Secretary of State James Baker, and Palestinians who lobby Washington in order to get a Palestinian state. And that's when the pressure began for the Palestinian state, was at the close of this war. I personally believe because the United States chose Iraq, a land that has long been condemned in the Bible.
Also known as Babylon.
Also known as Babylon. But a land that's long been condemned, over the territories of Joseph, and preparing the territories of Joseph for the return of the children of Joseph, that this is why, spiritually, we're in Iraq today.
Very interesting. Yeah, and you know, you know, the Bushes don't just have their thumb in the eye of Israel. They got their thumb in the eye of the Apache nation. So we want to tell them, remind the folks about the skull of Geronimo.
Okay, I don't know how much we want to talk about that right now, Blue Otter, because
we can talk about whatever you like. We've got about 11 more minutes left.
Okay, I'd like to get Jimmy Ten Rivers to talk to you about that. And,
oh, is he there with you?
No, he's not.
Okay, we'll do another interview.
Yeah. But I'll say this much. Yes, it's true that Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the president, was the individual who led the raiding party at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and dug up the skull of Geronimo and took it to Yale University and established the Skull and Bone Society. They also took the skulls of some other young Apaches. We believe the skull of Mangus Coloradus, who was also a revered Apache leader, who was killed by the army in Mexico, and his head had never been found. Anyway, this...
And Mangus was a Membrano.
Right, he was a Membrano. And the Apache here, the descendants of the people of Geronimo, are uniting under the Membrano. And let me just put in a real quick plug for what we're doing here again. I am a member of the board of directors of Iglesia de Atlan. I'm a spiritual elder among the Apache, and I'm a member of the board of directors of Turtle Tribe, and therefore I have been permitted to share this vision of Atlan. But there's a band of about 60 families of Apache, and we're joined by growing numbers of Chicano. And we have been told by the Spirit, and this has been confirmed time and time again, to prepare for the arrival of Native American elders. Now, this is in keeping with many Native prophecies for the last time, but the one that is most specific that comes to my mind is from the Oglala Sioux, that a place should be prepared in the mountains for the time just before great fires sweep the plains, where elders will come to plan how to steward and heal the land after the purification. And we believe place is somewhere in proximity of the eastern gate of this sacred Four Corners region, Atlan. And again, this is the gate where traditionally elders assemble.
And you know, when I first met, of course, I've known you probably since about 2000, year 2000, and on and off, you know, either been reading your reports that came out of Israel or, you know, we started corresponding and, you know, picking up a friendship 2-3 years ago. But anyway, just met Jimmy Tenmervers this last January, and when I heard that prophecy, I went, oh my gosh, because back somewhere in the summer of 2006, Creator talks to me every once in a while, and you know, there's details at prophecykeepers.com, but he told me something really, really far-fetched. And it was to warm me up and get me ready for what he told Jimmy. What he told me was that money needed to be raised for travel expenses for elders to come to a certain place. Anyway, it just said that we need to raise a lot of money for travel expenses for these elders to meet and literally save the planet. And I was told, you know, that more information would follow. And then I met Jimmy. So there's something really special going on. And now I guess we got away from the main subject. Did you want to get back to House of Joseph?
Do we have any calls?
Yeah, callers. We're still looking for some callers. If you'd like to call in, USA 877-876-5227. If you have any interest in the House of Joseph or learning how to become a Joe, or if you're in Canada or the U.S., you can call 888-815-9756. And we've got a little less than 7 minutes to go. I'd love to have you call in. I don't know if we're going to get any callers or not, but what's Creator telling you to say right now?
Pre-recorded show, please don't
like
call
to,
in.
Point your listeners to the Jerusalem connection to the Red Spirit. There's a very ancient Apache prayer which mentions the holy city of Jerusalem. Its translation, by the way, this was translated by Jay Lone Wolf, the man you mentioned at the top of the show who's in need of our prayers.
Right at the top of our BBS website.
Right. I spoke with him briefly this week. He's improving, but he still is not out of the woods. But he sent this this prayer for us to begin praying in the sweat lodges here. I'm just going to give you the translation. But it goes, I dance inside a circle of men and women, they say. Long life inside a circle is made, they say. Inside our circle dances the great spirit among us, they say. Having to prepare, he walks. Friends, they say, he walks back to Jerusalem, where the first tribe called home. And there's also this Hopi connection with Jerusalem, not just with the story I related from the Book of Mormon about Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef and his son, but Chief Mike of the Hopi, who's been deceased now for about 10 years. But just before he rode away on his great white horse, He called a meeting of his people on 3rd Mesa at Old Arabi, Arizona, and together with Hotavia on the 3rd Mesa. And these are the oldest continually occupied places in North America. But he told his people that it was time to reveal a great secret that had been told to him by his grandfather just before the Great White Horse came for his grandfather years earlier. He was saddened by his grandfather's spirit beginning to fade and the horse neighing outside of his door. So his grandfather, to lift his spirit, told him that someday he would be chief. And when the time came for him to ride away, he would reveal this secret, that Tawanasavi, the place the Hopi call their origin, and which is literally translated in the Book of Hopi, the, quote, center of the universe, was Jerusalem. Now, when I studied at the Orthodox yeshivas in Jerusalem, specifically the yeshiva Or Samea, there was a teacher there who taught on the mystical concept of the center of the universe, and that being Jerusalem because of what is known as the Eben Shakia, the foundation stone upon which the retaining wall of the Temple Mount was built, is there in Jerusalem. And it's a stone so large that no human hand could have touched it, and therefore it's believed to be the center of the universe. Now, when I was told that story by a Cherokee woman who knocked on my door one day, totally out of the blue, shortly after I'd returned from Jerusalem, I found it hard to believe. I had to go down and make a personal visit to Hopi land. And during that first visit, I spoke with the late chief's 3 daughters and one of their husbands, Jimmy Ten Rivers, and I returned about 18 months later to seek the blessing of Medicine Man up on 3rd Mesa. And he confirmed Chief Mike's pronouncement. We also spoke with 2 Hopi at a campground near the Visitor Center on 2nd Mesa, and a lady who operates the museum and gift shop. Again, confirmation. The Hopi have appointed a delegation to go to Jerusalem. They're ready to go and to take with them very ancient pottery shards, but, of course, they have to await an invitation.
Wow, so that's... You know, that really makes it official. You know, it wasn't just Chief Mike that declared that. It was his father, Mike Lanza, and his father, John Lanza.
Right.
So, well, excuse me, his father, you know, his father, he was Chief Mike, and his mother, Mina, and before that, old John Lanza. And, of course, this does tie in with our mutual teacher, John Red Hat, and oh, by the way, there's links from our BBS website to a lot of interesting places, including information about John Red Hat. And we've got about a minute and a half to go for the end of the show. If you want to offer some parting words, and folks, I want to remind you, please support Ben Yosef. Maybe one of the most important things that you'll ever do. But anyway, what have you got for us in the last minute and a half?
Well, I do appreciate the opportunity to talk on your show tonight, Blue Otter. And we do have some very severe financial needs here. We're attempting to renovate a house that was purchased as a HUD repo. It had been vacant for several years. We were able to buy it, and now we're in the process of fixing it up so that these elders can start coming and have a place to stay and not have to worry about lodging and food while they're here. And we want to arrange it so they can stay for up to 20 days to attend our purification lodges, get to know the leaders in the community. We'll arrange transportation for them, everything. But this is going to cost us some money. And we are a very poor people. We have some severe needs. The city here, the town, I should say, has not been very nice to us. They've just increased our... the charge to turn your utilities back on to $75, and have imposed a policy that you no longer have a month's leeway, but if you're delinquent 3 days on your utility bills, you're cut off.
Oh, my gosh. Folks, got about 5 seconds to go. We'll wake up Don and tell him to kick off our tag music. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Keepers for this week.
we'll get together next week. Thank you so much, folks, and bye.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Of a night.
mankind again. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.